Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Taking stock on News Talk.
Thanks to Skillnet Ireland, driving business success through innovative training and upskilling.
And we're joined now by Ian Anderson, Executive Chairman of PR firm Cicero. Ian, you're very welcome. Thanks for joining us.
It's good to be with you.
You have just been appointed the UK's first LGBT business champion. So what is an LGBT business champion?
Well, I think I'm going to find out. It's a new role. It's a new role for the UK government. And it's really about trying to bring together both the LGBT community, the business community, and government to try and get the right policies to be able to support LGBT people at work, allow them to thrive, and unlock and unleash, I think, some of the economic benefits of doing so.
I assume, Ian, the homophobia problem isn't as bad as it used to be, or maybe it is. Tell me what you think.
Look, I think social progress for LGBT people has come on leaps and bounds since I've been in the world of work. I've been in the world of work about 30 years, and if I compare now to where we were before, things are a lot better. But, you know, for most of my career, I wasn't out at work. Since I've been out at work, my business is about 4 or 5 times larger. And I think that's partly as a result, as a leader, that, you know, people drive towards you when you really are truly yourself. And really, that's what I want to try and achieve here in this brand new role. It's to create a culture across large businesses, small businesses, British businesses, international businesses that have come into the UK, to allow people just to be themselves and to thrive.
But that does imply that you think the culture at the moment maybe isn't doing that. So are there issues around this still? Just outline for me what they are.
Yeah, so according to some of the recent work by both Stonewall, the LGBT charity, and the Chartered Institute of Personal Development in the UK, about between 35 and 40% of LGBT people don't feel that they can be out at work. About 40% of people have experienced workplace intimidation. Now that's significantly higher than for heterosexual folks at work. So there's quite a big job that is there to be done. And I think by having this business champion role, there's a chance to focus down on it.
Yeah, no, the societal consequences of homophobia, unfortunately, have been obvious. We don't really need to get into that here. But your argument, I think, is that there are also business consequences.
There are real business consequences of people not being able to be themselves. And that's not just employees, that's also customers as well. So, I think we need to tackle that. I think we need to look at best practice. I'm very much a believer in a evidence-based way to create policy that works, that is proven to work. So look, one of the big things that I want to do first up is to put in place a buddying scheme. So large businesses, they've got HR departments, they've got diversity and inclusion teams, they've got a lot of resources. They've done a lot, particularly in the last 5 or 6 years, to make work just much, much better for LGBT people, to allow them to thrive. I think that's more difficult for small businesses. And I want to try and create a sort of buddying scheme, a kind of mentoring scheme, to take all that great work that has been done in big businesses and bring it into small businesses.
Just expand on that a bit more. What do these mentors do? What would it look like?
Well, I mean, we're kind of literally about to start to develop the idea. So I'm going to be talking to the Federation of Small Businesses, talking to the employers group, talking to the trade unions. But really what I see is there's a lot of material that's been kind of created. Rather than that small business having to go and kind of reinvent the wheel, if you like, that material could be taken into small businesses to allow them to capacity build in this area much, much faster.
But what can kind of one business do? I mean, this is a societal issue going back centuries or whatever. And, you know, if it's an attitude that's ingrained in people, I mean, what can a business do really to change that? It seems difficult. It seems like a difficult problem.
A business can do a lot. A business has a lot of economic power, large and small. It's about the environment that you create for your employees at work. It's about the environment that you create for your customers. I mean, let's face it, work is where we spend most of our time. So look, you know, at either a small micro level or at a large, large business level, cross economy level, there's a lot that businesses can do. They can work out the suppliers that they want to use. They can work out the products that they want to offer and sell. They can think about their employment policies.
Does that mean a boycott or something if this supplier or whoever isn't acting in an LGBT-friendly way? Is that what you're alluding to there?
I think a lot of people are looking really, really carefully at their supply chains. Very, very carefully at their supply chains. I mean, I know myself, you know, when I'm tendering for business, a lot of the time you get asked the question, what are you doing to create tangible change? And I think if you can't answer that question, you're not going to win that business. So no, I'm not into boycotts. What I am into is encouraging companies to think about their supply chain, to think about their suppliers, and to ask questions of those suppliers as to how they are going about their business practices.
Yeah, well, let's just tease out a little bit more some of the business consequences if maybe you're not, you know, abiding by best practice in this area. Obviously, you do put yourself in a position maybe where you're not attracting the best talent, or where your employees feel that they're not able to perform to their highest level in your company. But the other thing is this issue of the pink pound. Is that still something that has power, this idea?
I think the pink pound has a tremendous amount of power in every economy. And beyond that, I think what we're also seeing is there's this really big focus from investors right now on ESG investing, you know, environmental, social, and good governance. So investors are asking questions of companies as to what part they are playing in both economic terms, but also in communities, also in societies. So I think there's a sort of virtuous circle that's being created here, but I want to see if we can drive it a bit faster.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned ESG. I was only covering that topic last week with a guy who writes to the Financial Times, and fair to say he's a big critic of it. One of the points he was making is it's not really ideal if you're looking at a market failure to say that the solution is to have more of the market. What he would argue is, in an area like this, what we're talking about now, really it's government regulation is a better tool to try and sort some of these things out. So I wonder, Ian, is there any legislation or you know, something similar like that that you would think should be brought in?
Well, look, I'm a business guy, so my starting point is nudge rather than compulsion. But you know, part of the job of being the UK's first LGBT business champion is to look in the round as to what's going on. Now, we might, you know, when we talk to businesses, when we talk to trade unions, when we talk to customers, when we talk to employees, we might actually decide that there's some legislative change that is necessary here in order to drive things faster. I'm quite open. I'm not shutting any kind of doors or avenues at the moment, but my starting point is encouragement rather than prescription. And I think there's an awful lot of a lot we can do with encouragement and nudge and best practice, because frankly, in business, unless you're reinventing, you're very, very quickly kind of dead in the water. And I think this reinventing piece comes very much into the agenda that we're talking about.
Our guest here on News Talk is Ian Anderson, Executive Chairman of PR firm Cicero and the UK's first LGBT business champion. I want to ask you about the concept of a pay gap, Ian, and I've seen you talking about this before. LinkedIn did a survey that said there was a 16% pay gap between LGBT people and straight people, with LGBT people being the ones on the lower pay. Do you accept that finding, Ian? And if so, what might the reasons for that be? I mean, you can understand why there's a gender pay gap, because women are more likely to be in part-time work or take time out of the workforce. But what might be the reason for an LGBT pay gap?
Well, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, this has been kind of brought to me. If I'm going to be meeting LinkedIn and their team, because I think they've got a lot of very interesting things to bring into this debate. There are some parts of the LGBT community that are extremely well paid. In fact, well above national average. They're very, very high performing part of the workforce, extremely well paid. There are other parts of the LGBT community that are clearly less so. So I'd like to kind of interrogate those numbers. It is more difficult, this question, than the question of gender or indeed the question of race, because of course there's a large number of LGBT folks at work that don't want to self-identify. And this, yeah, all this work is not about forcing people out of the closet. Absolutely not. So it is a bit harder, but you know, let's go look at it.
How hooked into the government are you, Ian? Because there are a lot of gay rights activists who don't like the Tories. And you've been appointed by the Tories.
Yeah, look, this is a government role. It's a non-party role. It's a kind of envoy-like role. So it's not I'm not here to get involved in party politics. I don't want to get involved in party politics in any way, shape or form. What I want to try and do is bring the experience that I've got in business, bring the experience that I bring, I think, hopefully from the LGBT community, in order to look at what works and make life better for LGBT people at work. What I don't want to do is get involved in party politics.
One of the things you've been tasked with doing as well is to help British businesses to advocate LGBT equality in their international trading partners. Now, this is a really tricky one, because there are some countries, no doubt about it, that maybe haven't made as much progress on this issue. And, you know, if you come across as preachy or something, well, it mightn't make business sense.
Absolutely right. We can't be preachy. But equally, you know, we need to see reform. There are 59 countries globally where being gay is still illegal. 59 countries where homosexuality is illegal. Now, we've got to do something about that. We've got to do something about that in the right way. And actually, next year, the UK is going to be hosting the first global LGBT conference in the UK. We're going to be bringing together a lot of the NGOs, a lot of the actors, a lot of the people who are, you know, having to do some pretty tough work in some of those territories to see if we can move the dial on this.
And it's probably the bigger companies. I mean, the bigger companies, they can do this. The smaller ones that we talked about earlier, they're the ones who it's difficult for.
A lot of big companies who are active in territories are providing safe space for their LGBT employees. In fact, the safest place for those folks is at work. And we want to look at that. And actually, that's back to the supply chain point. There may be things that they can do with smaller companies that they're already doing with smaller companies in some of those territories just to make life better.
It's a big job, Ian, as we've talked about, and you know, you're just starting and you're trying to figure out what you're going to do. But I wonder, have you thought ahead to what you would like to achieve, maybe if when the time comes for you to move on and do something else? What would you like to look back on and say, you know what, this is what I did?
really want to put in place some tangible measures, whether or not it's that mentoring scheme to get small businesses working with larger businesses, whether or not it's, as we've just been talking, improving the opportunities, the economic opportunities at work for LGBT people in the UK and abroad. And look, I think with some goodwill, there's been tremendous goodwill coming towards me since this rule was announced. I think we can get some tangible change.
Okay, we leave it there. Ian Anderson, Executive Chairman of PR firm Cicero and the UK's first LGBT business champion. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Taking stock on News Talk.
Thanks to Skillnet Ireland, driving business success through innovative training and upskilling.